Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College, Mexico. The very popular and very powerful president of Mexico, AMLO, called affectionately AMLO, López Obrador, making decisions these last days that are striking. For example, there's a new refinery in Mexico that is both expensive and welcome, given some of the apparatus of Pemex, the national oil company. President AMLO has been keen on energy production and energy concentration in the hands of the executive. However, there are lingering matters have to do with narco-terrorism, the cartels along the northern border of Mexico, and also the conduct of the Army, the National Guard, and previous administrations and the AMLO administration about fairness, about justice. In particular, The Economist magazine is now featuring a lengthy observation of the disappeared, the relatives of the disappeared, especially dozens of students who disappeared at one time, believed to be victims of the cartel, and others who disappear in the drug wars. Professor, I want to learn about the challenge in Mexico, because there have been remarks recently and over the time that it sometimes serves the purposes of the palace of Mexico City not to enforce completely the laws of the land, or to enforce them with not equitably. In general, the narco-terrorism has been going on for so long, we can't just point to Mexico. It's a flow from all of the Americas into the demand by the U.S. And, of course, the United States shares a major part of the burden, because we're the source of cash that makes these networks viable. However, what is your general understanding of how AMLO has dealt with the drug wars along the border and deeper into Mexico?
John, first of all, as you pointed out, for me, although I do regard AMLO as a decent man, but I also see him as what you would call an old school party machine, kind of Chicago style leftist. He believes in a role for the state, whether it's in Pemex or electricity, CFE. But what happened is he encountered a very difficult situation. I think it's important to talk a little bit about, addressed it in a very flawed way. So the difficult situation, of course, you have long had these drug flows through Mexico, and especially in the early 2000s, a dramatic increase in the power of the big drug cartels, Sinaloa, at the time the Gulf Cartel, groups such as the Beltran Leyva family, and others. But with Felipe Calderón's war on drugs, there was a fracturing of those groups. So you had you went from about three groups to about seven to as many as 300 different groups. Groups started hiring their own armed wings, starting with the Gulf Cartel, who created an organization from Mexican special forces called Los Zetas, which then became a group in their own right. You had other groups, actually smaller groups, which actually just recruited street gangs. And so before you knew it, you had generalized violence across many different states in Mexico, a struggle over different plazas, et cetera. And that was the situation when AMLO came in. And so you had groups who were basically killing each other. You had attempts by the Mexican military, both the Navy and the Mexican Army, to combat that. But what AMLO fundamentally did, he initially said, okay, we're going to get away from a militarized approach. His famous phrase, abrazos, no balazos, so hugs, not shootings. And but what he actually ended up doing is he tried to essentially to get away from the old Mexican federal police and fold the police and the security forces into a new National Guard. The problem was that not enough police actually moved into the new organization. And so at the end of the day, the Guard ended up basically being a largely manned by the people who used to be in the military. But the Guard wasn't enough. And so actually the Mexican Navy and the Mexican Army continued to have to do a series of other security activities, controlling ports, controlling border. And so for a leader who basically said that he was going to demilitarize the situation, you now have a situation in which you not only have a militarized National Guard, which is operating as kind of an elite gendarmerie, but you also have the Mexican Army and Mexican Navy still on the streets doing other security functions without a police and a loss of a lot of community policing at the local level. And so violence has actually taken off in Mexico. And again, you have, again, the continued... But at the same time, there's also been some concern that AMLO has decreased cooperation with the United States. In the name of national sovereignty, he has passed a new national security law, which makes it a lot more difficult for Mexico to collaborate with the DEA and other U.S. counterparts. He released the former head of Mexican Army, Salvador Cienfuegos, who had been credibly indicted in the United States on collaboration with narco-trafficking. He's changed some finance laws. There's a lot of suspicions. He's visited actually the mother of one of Mexico's biggest narco-traffickers, Chapo Guzman, several times in her little pueblo in the heart of Sinaloa territory. And so there's a lot of speculation that AMLO has not only militarized things, but also that he has made maybe been favoring one narco group over the others, and that a lot of these activities have really made things a lot worse rather than better in this very serious situation that Mexico faces.
You bring to my attention, Professor, a recent controversy having to do with Ken Salazar, former Senator Ken Salazar, who is the U.S. ambassador to Mexico for the Biden administration. I read from the New York Times report of this matter. The Biden administration is just as resilient on Mexico for reliant on Mexico for migration enforcement, and Mr. Lopez Obrador's government has dedicated significant resources to that effort, arresting a record number of migrants last year. At the same time, Mr. Biden has vowed to pursue a broader agenda in the region, including defending human rights and democracy. Mr. Salazar, the ambassador, was seen as the perfect man to mollify the Mexican president. Officials assumed the former Democratic senator's folksy manner would work well with Mr. Lopez Obrador's man of the people persona. There is tension. What is causing the tension? Because this does look like a perfect match.
Well, John, there's a lot of strong feelings, and I would say a disagreement between reasonable people, whether our ambassador, Ken Salazar, is adequately representing U.S. interests and U.S. companies in Mexico. This is only the latest of a series of concerns that had to do with Salazar's essentially backing for AMLO when he some positions that he took that prejudiced U.S. energy companies when AMLO was pushing his energy reforms, his Pemex reforms, and in other matters. There's been some difficult feeling that our own ambassador has oftentimes been on the side of AMLO when AMLO has been acting against U.S. interests or U.S. companies. So the latest thing is that back in 2006, there was a highly contested election. This was between AMLO, the last time he ran for president, but lost, and Felipe Calderon, who was ultimately the winner in that particular case. At that time, AMLO screamed foul. He actually proclaimed himself president and camped out with a bunch of his supporters in the Zocalo, Mexico's big square, and again continued to say that the election was robbed from him. The matter was considered settled for a decade and a half. But it's something that AMLO had never completely let go of, not unlike the situation that we lived here in the United States. But the thing that surprised a lot of people was that the U.S. ambassador, Ken Salazar, would jump out and actually lend credence to AMLO's claims that the 2006 election was stolen from him. So for many people, that was essentially a U.S. ambassador essentially intervening, or at least making statements that inappropriately took a position in terms of a very sensitive Mexican electoral dispute at a time in which AMLO is in many ways trying to cast doubt on the credibility of Mexico's own electoral system. Sound familiar? So again, it, for many people, given what had previously happened in the past with Ken Salazar, his latest statement really rankled a lot of nerves within some circles in Washington.
And then we come to the disappeared. This is an economist observation, the columnist Bellow. Mr. Lopez Obrador has moved to fund the National Search Commission for the disappeared, the people who were suspectly victims of the cartels. The editorialist, however, in London writes this, Evan, which is sad, but it's true. Until the United States legalizes drugs, Mexico will always have a gang problem. Is that something that you hear much at the Army War College, that the demand drives the cartels and the cartels are unsolvable until the demand is solved?
Well, I read that piece, John, and I thought, frankly, that that conclusion was pretty seriously off base in what was otherwise a pretty solid piece. Clearly, the problems in Mexico are related to the powerful U.S. demand for drugs, and that's long been the case. Also, the violence in Mexico has been related to the ability to essentially legally purchase firearms in the United States and illegally smuggle them across the border in Mexico. That's something that's certainly true as well. However, the way in which Mexico got gangs really had to do with the way in which Mexico tried to combat the cartels, that basically going after the leadership of the cartels, it led to fractionalization, which led to more violence. And also, again, when the Gulf cartel started forming its own armed wing to take over the territory of its rival, the Sinaloa cartel, back in the 2000s, and then Sinaloa had to basically train its own elite force. And then from there, rapidly, every single major criminal group realized that it made sense to basically start hiring their own armed wings. And again, in some cases, those armed wings for little groups were nothing more than street gangs. But because they couldn't be sustained by drugs, what they had to do is basically allow the gangs that worked as their enforcers to go out and rob and extort in territories. And so it was really the fractionalization and this concept of armed wings in the struggle over the plazas that, in the context of the drug war, led to these proliferation of gangs and insecurity in a country which really never had that to begin with. And so while it's indirectly related to the U.S. drug demand, I think you really have to look at the way in which Mexico's own fight against the cartels is played out for understanding why you have this unprecedented number of street gangs today.
I read that the president of Mexico, Lopez Obrador, will be meeting with the prime minister of Canada, Mr. Trudeau, and the president of the United States in the fall. Are there significant issues between these three partners in North America progress, or is all going forward as according to the plan?
Well, there certainly are significant issues, John, but certainly this is also a very positive overall relationship that it was that particular meeting was anticipated, but it was formally agreed to, as I understand it, on the sidelines of the Summit of the Americas, one of the actual positive, productive things that came out of the recent Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles. But there is the tradition, again, of the three, what we would say, North American leaders, Canada, the United States, and Mexico, periodically meeting to discuss issues of the region. And again, that really goes back to the 1994 NAFTA agreement, which bound together Canada, Mexico, and the United States in unprecedented ways. And so making that relationship work has been long been a very important thing. And again, it's not just the U.S.-Mexican relationship, because there are energy issues, there are petroleum issues, there are mining issues. There are trade issues that actually bind not just the two, but actually Canada as well as part of those value chains. And it's interesting because in some ways you see that the very different politics, the relationship that you get when you talk about Trudeau interfacing with President Biden, with AMLO, is a little bit different and more complicated, but still positive vis-a-vis the relationship that you get just between President Biden and AMLO. So I see it as a positive thing and an important thing, given that we all share the northern portion of the Western Hemisphere.
Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute. We turn to Peru. Evan has just returned from Peru, and there are important changes in the governance in Peru and possibilities going forward in a nation that, like all the rest, are troubled by recovery, but was the hardest hit, I believe, of all the South American countries by the COVID-19. This is the New World Report. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.